Hello. Almost good afternoon. I'd like to call the ADA board meeting for June 25th to order. Jerry, would you do a roll call for the board members?
Here.
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 Here. Here. Thank you. Now, would you continue with the staff and public?
John Springsteen, Ada.
Is there anybody on the line?
Yes. It's Mark Davis.
Hello, Mr. Davis. Is anybody else on the teleconference with either Anchorage or Fairbanks?
This is the Anchorage boardroom. I'm going to do roll call here, starting here.
Chris Anderson.
Thank you.
Jeff San Juan, Ada.
Catherine Bush, Ada. Donna Lindley, Architect.
Jerry Judah, Department of Law.
Pop Scanlon, Bank of Alaska. Mark Feynman, Bank of Alaska.
Quinn Kempinen, Ada.
I don't know.
That is everybody in our Anchorage boardroom.
Thank you.
Thanks, Quinn. Is that everybody, Sherry?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Okay, item number four is agenda. Someone move it for me. I'll move the agenda.
I second.
Thank you. John, you have a suggested change?
Yeah, to the chair, I'd request that we move item 7B before item 7B.
All right. Switch those around. Any objection? All right, so... those are moved. Thank you. Next up is public comments. For those that have done before, please limit it to 3 minutes. We'd like to hear your name, affiliation, if you have any. And we will start with anybody online. Is anybody online wishing to make a public comment? Anybody online? Hearing none? Anybody in the boardroom here wishing to make a public comment? The boardroom. Seeing and hearing none, we will close the public comments. That's up prior minutes for May 19th and May 5th.
Chairman, I'll move out.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Thank you. Board members had a chance to review it. Any changes or problems with it? Minutes for the 19th? Hearing none, those minutes are adopted. Next up, May 25th.
Let me make one. I just discrepancy. It's the minutes, May 27th. So I'll move to May 27th.
Second.
All right, so you're now May 27th minutes. Comments from board members on the minutes for May 27th? Minutes are adopted. Thank you. Item number 7, resolution G15-13 development project finance loan. Blood Bank of Alaska.
Yes, Chairman, I'll move resolution number G15-13. Bank of Alaska.
Thank you. And a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Crystal. John?
Item 7A, resolution G15-13 authorizes ADA to make a development project finance loan to the Blood Bank of Alaska to complete a new headquarters, consolidated laboratory, and collection facility. The Blood Bank of Alaska is an integral part of the state's emergency preparedness network and an essential facility for disaster relief. The new facility will offer benefits to all Alaskans in terms of quality, safety, speed, and reliability of blood supply. At this time, I ask Jeff San Juan to present and call on others as needed.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, Jeff San Juan, Infrastructure Finance Development Officer. And before you is... Resolution G15-13, a development project finance loan request from the Blood Bank of Alaska, Inc. The loan request is for a loan up to $8.5 million, broken down for the following uses: approximately $7 million for finalizing design, construction, completion, and construction-related costs of a 57,000-square-foot laboratory and collections facility at 1215 Airport Heights Road at the corner of DeBar Road and Airport Heights in Anchorage, Alaska. This facility is across from Alaska Regional Hospital, and the new building, as mentioned, will become the Blood Bank of Alaska's new headquarters. An estimated $1.5 million is in furniture, fixture, and equipment. That makes it a total of the $8.5 million loan. The loan is structured in two phases. The first phase is a fixed line of credit piece, which is the construction portion, which will be interest only during the draw period of the 18 months, and will subsequently be converted to the second phase of a long-term term note for the balance of the loan. The permanent financing, which is 35 years, is fully amortized with principal and interest payments for the full term and monthly. The interest rate will be locked in at a fixed rate as of the U.S. Treasury market as of today's board meeting, with the spread of 250 basis points plus the U.S. Treasury as of today's date. The range historically for the past month have ranged from 2.94 for U.S. Treasuries to 3.22 for the month of June, which will give us a corresponding rate between somewhere between 5.44% and 5.72%. So the markets have been moving up lately within the past week. The loan also is structured so that if a new market tax credit allocation is provided, that we're able to be able to finance the make arrangements for the financing so that it fits within the new market tax credit structure. The collateral piece is we have a first lien position on the new. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hold on, please. Fred,
Mr. Chairman, I had a question on the bullet point that we just went through, which is, can you describe the 7-year forbearance period and its purpose? That seems like a long time for a forbearance.
Yes, through the Chair, Deputy Commissioner Parody, the 7-year forbearance period is part of is required piece of a new market tax credit allocation for the loan that. In order for a new market tax credit to be given, especially if it's to sum it up, in order for the new market tax credit structure to be in place, the leveraged lender has to have they have to put in place a 7-year forbearance period, because the new market tax credit is structured over a given period of 7 years. So the investor gets basically percentage of allocation of a tax rate per year, depending on and through a 7-year period. And so because that 7-year period, the new market tax rate structure allows that we can't forbear as a lender if a new market tax rate is implemented. I don't know if that answers your question.
It's required by federal law.
I know that it did, but I didn't understand it.
Fred, it's required by federal law for the new market tax credit to apply. You don't really get a choice in the matter.
I'll take the rest of my question offline. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Fred. The question?
Okay.
Go ahead and continue.
On the collateral piece, the loan will have a first real estate secure position on the new building that's being constructed. We've incorporated the value of the property to be a total of $38,334,977. Our loan to value for the collateral on that piece will be just under 30%. And we also will have a first lien position on the existing building that the Blood Bank is headquartered at on Laura Street. That building is projected to be sold once the building is constructed and completed and the Blood Bank moves. And so there is a purchase agreement in place with Pfeiffer Development for $2,750,000. And so if once that's sold and the loan is repaid down, we'll have a loan value of about 18% on that. As far as the environmental report, there are no known contamination on the new site that they have they're building on. For financial information, the board has been given a separate confidential cover that details all the financial information for the fund bank. But for the projected performance that are provided to the authority, the performance provide at least adequate 1.25 debt service coverage to cover all years, starting with the term loan. The blood bank has an additional $250,000 line of credit with Wells Fargo Bank, and it has a zero balance on that. For the sources and uses of the project has sourced roughly 73% of the funds from the state of Alaska through grants and have received $3.4 million, another 6% from private donations, and the aid alone portion makes up about 19% of the total sources needed to complete the project. The use of the funds for the design and construction costs, approximately $36.9 million, 82% of the funds are going towards construction. The purchase of the land was $2.9 million, which was 6%. The other management, furniture, fixtures, and equipment equate to about $3.8 million, which is 9%. And they have a contingency of about $1.4 million. The sources of repayment.
Just a minute, please.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I missed a question before this section on source and use of funds in the financial information. When you look at the EBITDA information in the first paragraph, it's annually pretty erratic. It's $836,000 in 2011, $397 in 12, $744,000 in 13, and $193,000 in 14. Why is that so variable?
Commissioner, one of the things we can't talk is that's part of the under the confidential piece is we can under the executive session. If you have any questions, we can go into details and I can explain about the historical piece of the historical piece of the financial statements.
I appreciate the cautionary note you just gave me, and I'll hold on my question for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and the source of uses. So the sources of repayment are going to be from the conversion of working assets to cash. And so the blood bank collects blood from donors. They test and process the blood for sale, two customers being the hospitals and the clinics throughout the state of Alaska. The secondary sources of repayment that are projected for this loan is additional capital campaign raise for the projects from the blood bank, and also the potential new market tax credit. And now, lastly, the tertiary source of repayment is, last option is liquidation of the collateral. The borrow history and management is the blood bank is a nonprofit entity established in November of 1963. It's been doing business in the state of Alaska for over 50 years. It operates as a nonprofit, mission-oriented organization that provides blood and blood products to more than 20 hospitals and clinics throughout Alaska, from Kotzebue to Sitka. The Blood Bank of Alaska is governed by a board of volunteer board of directors, representing various community leaders in fields such as medicine, business, and civic service. The Blood Bank recently just celebrated their 50th anniversary and have added seven other professionals to their board of directors since established. The CEO, Chief Executive Officer, is Robert Scanlon, who's also in the boardroom this afternoon. And he joined the blood bank in 2012 with a vast experience of from American Red Cross, where he also managed a multi-million dollar capital campaign project that supported the expansion services by the region and national organization that he was a part of down in Idaho. And lastly, not lastly, but the economic benefit of this project provides significant economic impact and statewide impact for services that the blood bank provides. The McDowell Group did a study that showed that the total jobs created directly and indirectly represented about 230 jobs. The expanded service operations for the jobs after construction is estimated to be about 20 of indirect, direct, and induced. The 11 specifically new positions that are going to be formed because of the construction of the facility is going to estimate an annual salary of about $660,000. So these are high-paying jobs that average roughly around $60,000 for the new positions. And that's also in addition to another $600,000 that's going to be in increases for the existing staff because of the facility expanding. The facility construction is estimated to produce an economic impact of about $66 million, and annual expanded operations is about $3.5 million. Some of the strengths and weaknesses of this project are the emergency preparedness infrastructure. The building is designed to international building standards for an essential building, meaning a lot of the materials in the building are reinforced to withstand major once-in-a-lifetime events that could possibly happen in the state of Alaska. The strength of this project also is that our loan-to-value is 30%, and the economic development with the jobs and dollars provided. Some of the weaknesses is that it is a nonprofit. There is no guarantors for this. The organization is doubling in size, and has not historically shown an improving capacity as they grow. The covenants, major loan covenants that we have on this loan are required audited financial statements to be provided within 180 days of fiscal year close, a 1.25 debt service ratio, and a negative covenant that will allow any new debt or lease payments to be approved by the authority. The insurance on this is that we are listed as co-obligee on the existing 100% performance and payment bond that's currently under NYSRDA construction, and also be listed as loss payable and additional insured on all existing and future policies. The insurance, the construction project also has a builder's risk insurance. The recommendation by the staff is that the loan be approved, and the loan will facilitate the completion of much needed infrastructure to support the state of Alaska's emergency preparedness plan. The flexibility given by ADA's financing terms allow for the potential of new market tax credit subsidy in this project should allocations be distributed. The project provides for significant impact of approximately 230 jobs created and $66 million in economic impact. And then if there is any further questions, we have Doug Bank here as well as Mark Davis on the line.
Thank you. Any questions from board members?
Mr. Chairman.
Brett?
I just, it's a background document question, but why is the audit for the year ended 2013 instead of the year ended 2014 used as the basis for this package?
The Blood Bank of Alaska has historically done their financials, and if you look at the dates on there, typically the audited financials come out in September, and so they're in the process of their audit going on right now. And one of the strengths of the Blood Bank is that the core group of board of directors have been in place for a significant time, and they've weathered basically some ups and downs throughout the years. And so they are a nonprofit organization, but they've had, if you look at the confidential documents under the finance plan, they've had historical plans in 2005 where they've had losses of $500,000 and had a game plan where they were able to recover that and be profitable again within a few years. And so they've been through the roller coaster. It's a mature organization that has weathered many ups and downs of the state of Alaska. So that, I don't know, if that may answer more of your questions.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, Brad.
Follow up. I I don't want to speculate on the coming downturn in Alaska. We'll all be weathering it. I would like some assurance that there's nothing material that's changed from the close 13 audit to the 14 audit. Just, you said you had the official from the blood bank there. I just, is there something lurking that we should be aware of, or are we good to go?
I'm going to have Bob come up to speak on that behalf since he's here.
If he can do that in a public meeting.
Can you do that, Bob?
It's a pretty straightforward question.
And it is. And in answering that question as straightforwardly as I can, okay, I'm passing the mic here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, sir.
Okay. Healthcare in general is at a very fluid point in its history. You have the Affordable Care Act, which we just now had the decision from the Supreme Court that the federal subsidies are now legal across the land. That is going to open up health care to a number of people who are maybe holding off on health care because they didn't know who was going to pay for that. You also have Medicaid expansion that's still in the wings. And, of course, you also have the changes going on with health system structures throughout the country. Here specifically in the state of Alaska, we're weathering that as well. You know, the hospitals are changing. Our methodology for delivering services are changing, but we have faith in the future. And the fact of the matter is that the Blood Bank of Alaska is the insurance policy for the state. And by that, what I mean is it's not just to meet critical infrastructure demands, but routine demands. A cardiac surgeon is not going to have surgery unless there's blood over at the blood bank. An oncologist is not going to have cancer treatment or life-saving surgery for his patient unless there's blood over at the blood bank. So at the end of the day, there's ups and downs in blood banking like many industries. We're a nonprofit for a reason. Our primary concern is delivery of the mission, delivery of services, as opposed to delivering dividends to stockholders. And I hope that answers the question.
It does. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? I have one on the memorandum on page 7. You talk about the risk, and bring this up what Fred mentions. I don't see a risk that identifies cash flow projections. I do see it as a supporting under mitigation, and I assume based on that statement that you're satisfied with the cash flow projections based on the past history of the blood bank.
Through the chair, yes, a lot of the historical financials support the debt service on the $8.5 million loan, and that's part of the reason why the term, the regulations allow for the term of the loan to be the useful life of the building. The life of the building is 50 years. We've decided just to, because it was a nonprofit, that to have steady low payments at the term would be around the 35-year mark, and then the projections, obviously they're just projections, and so we feel like the certification by the blood bank or the third party would give us, you know, I don't know what their future is going to be, but I know that many of the added products and services that they're going to provide, as well as efficiencies being had by the consolidation of the facilities and the efficiencies just within the building itself, would allow for a cash flow to be able to be to service the debts. And one of the things we are provided here is that they are able to adjust their rates and for the services. So we do feel that the blood bank is able to make debt service obligations.
All right. Thank you. Before I close this out, any questions? Thank you very much for that presentation. Anybody else want to say anything? John, anything else to add to it? All right. So at this time, I'll call for the vote. Sherry on Resolution G15-13. Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Aye.
Deputy Mr. Parody.
Aye.
Deputy Mr. Burnett.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
And Mr.
Thank you. right, the agenda shuffle here. Next up is Interior Energy Project Update.
Update of the Interior Energy Project. This time we have update. I want to lose the meeting.
Good morning, Bob and Nick.
Good morning. Nick Schmolniak is up. We have for you today not just a presentation on what we're doing now and what we've decided at a 6 month since restart in January, that it would be good to summarize where we've been across the last 6 months before we go into what we want. And then Nick is going to provide part of the presentation because really he's done a lot of the work underneath the competitive solicitations and thought it would be appropriate really rather than me paraphrase his one. We'll talk about the benchmark for the next 6 months. Slide. So, January and February, we had, you know, really an IEP restart in January with the termination of the concession agreement. The governor's office introduced House Bill 105. AEA and ADA developed a project charter which, you know, created that framework and the work that's been going forward. The change had to do with moving from a concession agreement to looking at different options, and that's part of what that original resolution that the board approved in January allowed is evaluation of options and then bringing the solutions. Am I allowed to see people back? And then one of the other things that we felt in addition to evaluating other options was making sure both the utilities and the community were more involved in both the process and the decisions as we move forward, picking a plan that was really designed to suit them. The Pentex letter of intent to purchase was agreed upon and pursued during that period of time. And then the IEP teams were formed with me coming on as lead. The due diligence team worked the Pentex. Gene Ferriero led the legislative effort. And so that January, February was really the kickoff of the new the IEP restart. You know, March and April, really, most of that effort was spent legislatively. You know, House Bill 105, it started with allowing ADA to explore other options other than North Slope. You know, it received significant attention. I won't review all of that, but it was, you know, a number of committee hearings, lots of presentations, lots of individual meetings. You know, it took longer than expected and consumed more resources than expected. Ultimately, it passed. It was modified, as you're aware, and propane and pipeline options were authorized. ADA's involvement in the direct involvement in contracting for gas on the market was limited, but given ADA hadn't planned to contract for gas and had planned to facilitate for the utilities, that wasn't a large bar. Intent language required open and competitive process, which will lead to the RFP that we're going to discuss. And then there were reporting requirements added. There's a bill signing for House Bill 105 next Tuesday. The governor's going to sign it at the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. I plan between now and then to prepare kind of a kickoff starting point report for the legislature so they have a baseline. We're required to report quarterly. And we'll have a baseline report, so they have a zero starting point with the signing of House Bill 105 is our intent on how we plan to comply with that. There was also, independent of the legislature, that due diligence team, it's not an insignificant task to go through an entire acquisition due diligence process, and Ted led that effort, and that resulted in the action that we took on June 11th. May and June, now we're to pulling the trigger, you know, we're through the legislature, we're, you know, finishing up due diligence. There was a lot of work early in May in the local community. You know, I was before the city councils, the assemblies. We had a public meeting that many of you came to that was a town hall meeting hosted by the local mayor. We went to the Economic Development Corporation. We went to the chamber and took input on what the board was considering relative to Pentex. You know, work begins on integrating utilities. That didn't begin until after you acted on the 11th, but, you know, the discussions on that have started. We'll spend more time on the specifics of the competitive solicitations, but there is an RFP on the street for natural gas and alternatives. There's one for purchase of natural gas, and then there's a framework for utility collaboration. In the lower right-hand corner, for those of you that have a copy, I thought if you have an interest, the RFPs, the final versions are on the ADA website, procurement website for both of them. You know, but you can go on and look, and if you have questions, you can contact either Nick or I. And then we have a 60-day period while we're waiting for proposals to come in. And so that's where, you know, work that one would have wanted to happen on storage, one would have wanted to happen on transportation or conversion, that it got pushed to the curb while we were working the legislative session. Now, you know, that's going to be our focus the next 60 days while we you know, respond to questions from the proposers. On Pentex, that was the acquisition decision was made. There are closing tabs that remain. Ted continues to lead the Pentex acquisition team through closing. As anybody knows who's bought property, it's not sold till it closes, and so there's still work to be done, and that work is ongoing. A big piece of that is that management agreement on how it's going to operate when it closes, and that work will, you know, will involve the ADA management structure that guides F&G's operations until the point at which the asset is transferred, and then the application for the CPCN transfer has already been filed. There was a lot of discussion at all the public meetings, particularly the chamber, and as part of the North Pole resolution on the impact of that Hillcorp supply contract, and so we'll have discussions on that existing contract. We'll reinitiate the storage work. While the pricing might be stale, the design and engineering and underlying economics of the 5.25 million gallon tank that F&G was looking at, that will get reheated and reevaluated, because that's the most likely first step for storage for the IEP. Now, you approved a resolution on how rates will be established for ADA board management and ownership, and that work will go on across now until close, and the recommendation will come to the board for the rates. I expect they'll match the rates you saw in the financial plan that was presented to you mid-July. And then finally, working with utilities on participation in the IEP process. We've talked to utilities about, shared this with you before, being on evaluating committees for the project that we select, you know, providing input along the way on gas contracts, making sure that as we move forward, the steps that we're taking match what the utilities want, and if utilities decide we're not interested in how you're doing it, we'll downscale and we'll make our decisions and recommendations to you based on the conditions. But we, you know, we fully plan to engage them and keep them engaged while we work across the next 60 days. And Nick?
Okay. Bob? So, recently a local utility executive asked publicly what's ADA's plan to get natural gas to Fairbanks, and I thought that was a great question. This first leg gets right at that. This RFP process is ADA's plan for bringing natural gas or propane to interior Alaska. It has its roots in the project charter that we developed in January and February. The project charter set out a framework for having a wide open process where all options are evaluated, the utilities are brought in, the communities brought in to help evaluate and buy in to whatever project selected. And it's also consistent with the plan we described to the legislature in every hearing in June. We constantly talked about a competitive process where we open up for solicitations, open up for proposals, and ADA and the utilities and community will evaluate in an open competitive process what the best option for the IEP is. So this sets forth the plan. And the most important part about this is it is, in fact, an open, fair, competitive process. The RFP, I believe, we issued it 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's open to natural gas, LNG, or propane. We selected a base case of a 6 BCF cooking with LNG plant, with the LNG plant alone, no natural gas supply or transportation. But that was simply just a base case to start from. We were very clear that we will look at and accept and encourage all alternative offers, including a LNG plant that includes LNG supply or natural gas supply into the plant. So that would be a framework where the utilities actually buy the LNG at the supply into the plant. A proposal for natural gas, liquefaction, and transportation. That would structurally look a lot like the existing Hillcorp contract where the utilities are buying LNG delivered to the city gate, as well as any North Slope project. As part of the North Slope project, we made it clear that ADA is willing to contribute the existing gravel pad on the North Slope, as well as the Golden Valley electric natural gas contract with BP. And we've also opened it up to propane. There's been a lot of talk of propane. That propane could either be produced on the North Slope or imported from outside of Alaska. And then finally, we are open to small diameter pipelines, 12 inches or less, either from Cook Inlet or in the North Slope. The propane option and the small diameter pipeline options were explicitly put in HB 105 as options that the legislature wanted us to look at. So while we have 6 BCF cooking in this plan as a base case, it certainly has no preference, and all these options will be considered. So through the process, before we issued the RFP itself, we put together the draft RFP, we distributed it to the utilities. The idea behind starting with the project charter was that the utilities would be the final off-taker of the agreement, that this RFP would not lead to a contract between ADA and the developer, LNG out of the plant, or the buy services of the plant, or pipeline, or whatever infrastructure is built, but instead that we would facilitate the commercial negotiations or facilitate the commercial structure between the private developer and the utilities. So from the very beginning, we brought the utilities in. They had opportunities to provide comments on the RFP, and we expect that they'll be invited to be on the actual evaluation team. And I'll double back to that concept or that idea I put out there a second ago, that ADA is simply, through this RFP competitive process, facilitating a commercial deal between the private developer and the utilities. ADA will probably enter into a contractual agreement to provide financing, but it's not going to be ADA actually signing up agreements to buy capacity out of that plant. And that's an important distinction. It's something that we've been trying to communicate and press on over and over again since last January, that this is going to be a deal between a private developer and utility. It is being very deliberate and stepping back and moving from we're going to be much less of a project developer like we have in the past, where we said, okay, this is kind of the design we want. We want this sort of plant, this sort of technology in this location on this pad. Who's going to come build it for us? And now we're taking a more of a strict project development finance role, where we are going up to the market and say, here's the source of funds we have, here's the policy objective, how do you want to do it? So when people ask what ADA's plan is, we're not sitting back designing a plan, designing a value chain. Instead, we're setting up a process so the private market can come in, propose the best they have, and we simply play the banker role. And then we have the utilities come in, and they actually will enter into the agreement to provide those services, utilizing the funds. Responses are due August 3rd. At that point, we anticipate taking 30 to 60 days to whittle that down to 4 final respondents. We have if you look into the RFP, we have the evaluation criteria lined out with the scoring system. So when we get to those final 4, at that point, we will we'll ask for each of the final 4, up to the final 4, best and final offer. And then from there, we'll probably enter into a more direct negotiation with those 4 to whittle it down to a 1. And the objective is, by the end of the year, that ADA, in collaboration or with the full backing of the utilities, can come before the ADA board with 1 proposed project developer that we propose to finance and the utilities are prepared to sign off-take agreements for.
Which is also a requirement of House Bill 105, we bring a complete soup to nuts plan with projected costs to the home as part of the used financing test.
Yes. So moving on to the RFI, at this point, either myself or Deputy Commissioner Parody could probably be interchangeable on who's presenting this,
as ADA issued this RFI, but we issued it at the direction of PCCED, and they did that at the direction of Administrative Order 272, which Governor Walker directed Department of Commerce with Department of Revenue, Department of Natural Resources, to work on this problem to evaluate the feasibility of cooking with natural gas to solve the zero energy project. So this RFI will not be, it'll be as formal, but it will not be as binding as the RFP. That's why we went for an RFI instead of an RFP. And the purpose of this RFP, or this RFI for cooking with natural gas, is to determine quickly whether or not cooking with LNG plant is a feasible option, whether it's something we should continue to invest time and money in. And looking at, if we get proposals whether or not this is something we should seriously consider. I've spent enough time in the cooking with natural gas market. I've learned everyone kind of has their own opinion or their own theory on how the market works. ADA wants to get out of that business. We don't want to be sitting back, you know, sitting in our offices, calling around, trying to, you know, guess who's going to provide gas at what price. We want the market to show up and say, this is how much gas we have, these are the terms, and this is the price. We can take that information and we can say, okay, cooking with natural gas or natural gas from cooking with could potentially meet the goals of the IEP. Let's move forward. Let's seriously consider an LNG plant and cooking with. The market response says we don't have the volume. We need a price that doesn't work. Then we know not to spend any more time or resources pushing for a cooking with option. This RFI and utilizing or this RFI moves into an actual commercial deal will probably only be for one specific option, one specific type of proposal to the RFP, and that would be for a standalone cooking with LNG plant. If we end up going forward with a North Slope plant or propane or a bundled cooking with supply, this RFI will simply kind of fall away as we take a different route. But if we do go with that base case, we need this information to move forward with confidence.
Nick, so wouldn't you be able to find most of that information with DNR as far as supply volumes, where and who does what, without going to an RFI?
To the chair, to an extent, yes. DNR has access to a lot of technical and physical information. And what's that? Not pricing, the actual pricing, economics, and commercial structure.
We're talking about having the required supply.
Yes, and actually that's an important reason why the governor put DNR on this team, is when we started evaluating this RFI, if a respondent says, I've got this much gas, we need DNR to come in and evaluate they either they do or they do not. So DNR in this role and the information they have will probably be more in a validation role as opposed to going out and saying that this particular company has this much gas, this is the price in terms they should be able to offer you.
So is DNR a big indication what they think that the reserves are that will handle the interior energy requirements?
They haven't assigned, you know, this interior energy project demand and this amount of reserves we think you need, but what they have done is that this is our assessment of what cooking reserves are, and we had that number we presented to the legislature. I think it was in the 1,000 BCF or 1 TCF range, but they said that this is a fairly old and stale number, and actually our pressing to evaluate that made them look at it and say we need to revamp these numbers. So as I understand, they're currently in the process of taking an entire new look and putting together a brand new estimate of cooking reserves.
Okay.
And to note, you know, since I did put that 1 TCF number on the record, we'll put the caveats under that 1 TCF number with existing fields is not to include new fields coming to development or proposed fields like the Theory Kitchen Lights unit or the Cosmo unit or any of those other ones. So that is definitely a low number.
So if you have a proposer or someone that has the required or multiple required vendors to give you supply, you anticipate using DNR to verify that they actually can produce what they say they can? I mean, what assurances does the project have that they actually can produce what they tell you?
I'll answer this in two parts. One is the role of DNR. And DNR will be on to provide technical expertise. DNR does have access to confidential information that the producers and then leaseholders provide to them. We've been told and reminded a few times by DNR that they won't use that information inappropriately in commercial negotiations. So, you know, the producers listening should rest assured that it's going to be a straightforward help by DNR. The second part is how are we going to verify production? And there's probably going to be two or three different ways we go about doing that. You know, the most straightforward is we hire an outside consultant to come look at it. A second option would be utilize the DNR expertise that they have. And some of the more, probably I anticipate the more useful ones will be to write on the back of some of the other due diligence other utilities have done. If it's the Hillcorp or an existing producer, they probably put together the same work to back up other contracts with utilities. If it's a new one and they're signing other contracts, they've had producers to back up the production for other utilities. So in a best case scenario, we can piggyback on that due diligence to verify the technical aspects of the production. And the third is we are a bit lucky that ADA has actually taken a look at some of these new projects coming out in Cooking Lake. I won't name specific ones, but ADA has already done a bit of the due diligence on the side of is this a financeable project? And that'll be the same work that'll be needed on the back end. Is this something we can bank on to provide production? So we will tap into the medical areas of the technical backup.
What does this industry use surety? A backup for guaranteed delivery?
I've seen multiple different ways to secure, to provide, assurance of supply. Some of your larger producer can be, having the production in excess of what you need so you can, one fuel goes down, you can bring on another. Other options would be to align for alternative supply from different fuels, and then depending on how that risk is allocated, a lot of times that cost will fall on the producer to pay for that extra cost of the alternative fuels. And really, I anticipate that answer of how we're going to get surety will probably come down to discussion between the different utilities, especially if Golden Valley is involved and they've got some fuel switching, that maybe it's the ideal option where they fuel switch and the producer pays for that added cost if they lose production. But we'll probably have to come at it a couple different ways, either switching supply or switching demand.
So they wouldn't use like a performance. You wouldn't require a performance bond, or would you have a supplier under contract?
Quite possibly. If there's penalties involved that are the monetary, we'd have to have some sort of parent guarantee that they'd be able to pay that. But really, that's an exercise in financial responsibility as opposed to making sure.
Performance is not pay. Performance is provide service. So the performance, you're going to provide the service regardless of the cost.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering from a risk management standpoint, mm-hmm. with the interior, how would you mitigate that as far as is it anticipated one more than one supply source or with a backup, with a cost to have backup?
It'd be a combination of storage, fuel switching, probably natural gas storage, and backup suppliers.
For example, the North Slope project requires the utility to take the gas supply risk. And if you survive, or otherwise, you'll pay for that. But there was the North Slope was blanket. You fill out your own backup plan, you assume the risk of the North Slope in terms of that.
What about the risk to the plant? So they wouldn't assume the fact that they could deliver you one MCF.
Correct.
They would have never.
Now we're revisiting last December, but that was that's
yeah. Do you anticipate that would happen this time around?
I would hope not. I'd anticipate they might ask, but I'd hope we wouldn't settle on that.
Okay.
So last bullet, this is due July 16th, which is before the RFP. That was intentional. We want to know if Cooking the Gas is viable before we start pursuing a Cooking Lake demo and LNG plant. Next slide on the number 9, the IEP utility participation. We have, there's three main documents that we went forward with, the RFP, the RFI, and then an MOU that set up the framework for utilities participating through this ADA RFP process. The utilities have had, I think, over a month before I comment on that, a varying degree of participation from each utility. So we have, had signals in one form or another that they're willing to look at something like this and work with us. Whether or not this MOU is the final vehicle that's used and signed with some modifications, or whether or not it's just the platform in which we start meeting with them to find it.
Okay.
Or whether this MOU is simply the framework for which, or platform which we jump off of, to find a new document to set forward how the utilities are participating in the RFP process, not quite there. So as we move forward, especially after the purchase and sale agreement with Pentax. We were setting up these meetings with the utilities on how to move forward through the RFP. And the last bullet is a critical one, and one of the goals of this MOU is to get the utilities to start pushing developers proposing to provide energy to the IEP into this RFP process instead of a bunch of parallel paths, have everything come to the RFP. So we want the utilities pushing everything into the RFP as well as internally. Any calls we get, we're pushing them through the RFP process. And we encourage board members and the administration to do the same if they get calls or inquiries, is to push them through the RFP, that's a competitive process.
So, directly, if you get a call from anybody that wants to sell gas or propane or anything, and I get it too, say, Kirk Warren is the one that is taking all these questions, and don't engage, just, you know, direct them to Kirk, and if any questions that come in, he takes in, he responds to writing, let every possible vendor know the answer. So that's the process. And they've gone to the governor's office. They've gone to FEDC. Everybody wants to ask a question and have it be confidential because it advantages their thinking. And at this point, we're directing them all to Kirk.
So if I ask you a question, the response comes back to me and everyone else.
Yeah.
If you're a vendor, yes.
Vendor, yes.
Yeah. If someone asks you a question and you call me and I get a sense it's the vendor that's been asking you questions, I'll tell you please send them to Kirk.
Okay. Next slide 10. Utility integration. We heard this the last couple board meetings when we talked about the acquisition of Pentax, the value of utility integration. So I won't rehash that. But what I will say is, with the May 27th board meeting, after you voted on the purchase sale agreement of Pentax, within 30 minutes, Bob brought into the next conference room, and we started talking about what are the next steps to integrate these utilities. This is something that Ada's moving on immediately, and it's the first step is to kind of start thinking in terms of one integrated utility. I talked to the IGU board last week, and I talked to them about the value of, instead of sitting back thinking about, okay, how do we design phase two or phase three or start planning this? Think of the whole system. How would you envision this whole system? What would be your next steps with the whole system? And as we start moving forward in the actual physical and operations, that's where our mind needs to be. And what would follow is the commercial considerations. Who's actually going to own it? How is it going to be financed? Who's going to control it? But regardless of that, what we need is the most efficient physical build out and operation of the unit, so we can start thinking in terms of start planning and designing that way. And then what will follow is the actual discussions on who's the best to own and finance this integrated system. And I'll push this over to Bob. Last comments on that slide before you flip it over.
Yeah, the first step on that will be, other than the individual discussions that we've had, is to bring parties who are likely local control entities into a room, talk about the acquisition that's occurred, talk about the expectations the board set through approval of the financing plan, and then make sure we've judged interest properly on how many parties are interested in doing that, and we may end up with one or we may end up with multiple saying, yes, I'm interested, and work from there. That we need, in my mind, bringing a single recommended local control entity with a concept plan to the board in advance of the close, I think is responsibility of the team to do that, so that but when you come to close, hey, we know there's a plan moving forward, so you'll hear that in your October report is what I expect.
Actually, I will take one quick second before we move on, especially after listening to the AEA report this morning. What the action the board took with Pentax and what we're doing to integrate is essentially avoiding the mess the electric utilities are having at the inception of the expansion of the distribution system in Fairbanks.
It did make me feel better about myself to watch that project. I had a complicated project, and so I have to humble myself a little and recognize some people have hard time. The very last page is the expectation that the board should be able to ask us at the next meeting, and the next meeting, how are you doing relative to this? Because this is the next part on the very right side. You can see in the board action, there is an expectation that we bring you a plan, soup to nuts, that describes how the RFP result came out, the financing that we expect, how the component pieces fit together, and so that you can look at the pieces and add them up and see if they add up to 15 to the home, whether it's on Badger Road or Chena Ridge. And
I think we saw the Badger Road family from Gary.
Yeah. I told the ones in my car, I talked about asking my mom to stand on the side of the sign that says got gas. I couldn't get her to do it.
We were looking.
Yeah. So on there is broken down the request for information, the request for proposal, that Pentex acquisition completion. I will note the darker purple line that runs all the way across. Laying across that Pentex acquisition still is the AG action on the Pentex harvest agreement. And we don't know when that decision is going to be made and how it will play into the different components of this and are by agreement distant from that. And so we know what's going on, but we don't play a role positive or negative in that.
There's no certain date certain?
No.
They can just wait
tomorrow.
Or 3 years?
It would surprise me if it was 3 years. There are some benefits to it happening before the RFPs go in so that Hillcorp knows whether or not they have a purchase agreement approved while they're turning in proposals, but we don't control that.
So from a acquisition and a project deliverable and operational concept, not knowing that we will be constrained on how to make the LNG processing facility more efficient, which we would, if we don't, would we lose a season? What does that mean? What does that mean operationally, Bob? We don't know whether we own the facility or not.
Operationally, it means that things will continue running as they are now, with FNG running and managing from the Titan operation, which is one of the Pentex assets, until a determination is made.
But buying more efficient trailers.
Nope.
If right now the deal is that if it goes through, they're delivering to the city gate. So
right.
I wouldn't think we'd want to go buy a bunch of trailers knowing that it's a different way.
You wouldn't be buying trailers. Neither party could make upgrade decisions on a facility in terms of capacity or scales or meters or that. So there will be status quo on the 0.95B supply chain until that decision is made.
Well, 0.95 and whether the plant gets expanded or not. That
leads to that's more on the RFP side and what they would propose as part of a competitive solicitation.
So how does someone propose, how does that owner, potential owner, propose on the RFP if they don't know they have a plant?
That would be hard. And it would have to be traditional, and that's why the sentence I started with was it would be beneficial to Hillcorp as a proposer to know what the answer to the transaction is in advance of August 3rd. But we have no control over that.
Well, our goal is to drive the cost down.
You bet.
And this play patient capital where we can. One of those being is the transportation side. On the 1B that we're doing right now, and then I'll obviously get people to plug in to the new outside plant that we're putting in the ground that we saw yesterday, which plays into this LNG facility, the existing one.
We do have the authority, so if you look at in the purple, third from the bottom, it says optimize the existing Hillcorp supply agreement as part of the purchase agreement. ADA has the ability to enter into discussions with Hillcorp. And the Pentex acquisition team will be doing that, and so it's not totally closed. That uncertainty though makes it more difficult. And then finally, utility integration. If you go to October, I have LCE selected in a concept finance plan. The timeline that you saw in your finance plan that you approved was really December 31, but I think an indication of progress on that and where we are on that by October is an important benchmark, and so I put it in there in October rather than December. staff that staff report.
Can Jerry give us any indication on a timeline from the Attorney General's office on this, on their determination on the LNG purchase of Hillcorp?
Mr. Chairman.
Hear me, Jerry?
I hear you. The answer is no, I cannot. It's not something I'm participating in. I know they're working on it, but I don't know. The only timeline I'm aware of is there is a time limit in the agreements between Pentext and Harvest that if the deal isn't closed by such a date, then the deal goes away. Whether that, I mean, that may be extended depending on how long the AG takes, but I cannot answer the question of when there will be a decision.
Would it help if John or Ada staff would write a letter to the AG, you know, requesting a time certain to do something by so we can decide how to move forward?
I don't know whether that would be helpful or not, frankly. But
it would put it on the record, though, that we're here for that. Gary?
Birch Horton and Pittman. Don't we have Kathy following that RCA proceeding?
Yes,
isn't she the one that's responsible for that? So maybe the question that the chairman asked, I guess I'd ask it, would it be harmful if we sent a letter asking for expedited consideration? If it's neutral or good, I think it's a great idea.
Well, I can't envision a downside.
Yeah.
So maybe Kathy is one.
Mr. Wilkin, Lisa Ross in Kathy's D.C. office is actually handling the RCA proceedings for Ada. But the RCA proceedings is separate from the Attorney General's antitrust review. So
whoever it is and whatever.
We take your point.
Thank you, Jerry. I have another.
Jerry, go ahead.
So I want to understand that because as these dates approach us, some or all of us are going to get some questions. So let me tell you what I think I just heard. So if one or all of us, let's just give you a hypothetical. If one or all of us gets a letter that asks five questions and is signed by John Smith, so as I understand it, first thing I have to find out is it John Smith? John Smith. Is it just a person? Okay. Or I have to find out if it's John Smith Company, which makes him a vendor. Or is it John Smith Working Group for a Better Alaska? Is it an organization? So let's just take, those would be the three that I could see. So do I handle all three, or do all of us handle all three in the same manner? Do we take John Smith the person and send him to Kirk? Do we send, we know where the vendor goes. What about the group? Do we send the group to Kirk and do a broadcast response? How do we handle it?
Without putting some cuffs on you, so you can't act as public. The extent you have uncertainty over who it is or what the clutch is, then it's forwarded on and we don't deal with it. And answer as often as done, so-and-so forwarded it to us and asked that we reply. And then the copy, you'll get a copy back. And to the extent you know who they are, you know, somebody you know on the
team, yes, yes.
Use your judgment. And don't stop being a board member. But if there's uncertainty, then go ahead and use us as that.
If in doubt, send it to you.
And I would propose that the decision is less based on who they are and more what they're asking about. If they're asking about how is this RFP going to be judged, send it through Kirk. Who they are. So that, I would put more on what the question is about.
Did you say thumb cuffs?
Yes. Really hard to do anything with thumb cuffs.
Thank you.
Bob.
Thank you.
Any other questions from board members? Thank you for the presentation. Okay, that concludes the IEP update, John. So next up is resolution G15-02A, authorizing expenditures from sustainable energy transmission and supply development or otherwise SETS funds. John? Oh, sorry, let's get it on the table.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move resolution number G15-02A.
Second for anybody?
Resolution G15-0 is a request to amend the original resolution and provide the budget to continue the operation of alternative means to supplying energy to the interior of Alaska. The request is to increase the original SETS fund authorization from $500,000 to $1 million and the original economic development account authorization from $200,000 to $400,000. At this time, I'll ask Bob and Dick to return to the table and address questions as needed.
Is that not in our packet?
Number 7 is going to be, okay.
Fred?
Can you tell me the
project on the board? And so currently, we have a total of actual expenditures, encumbrances, and commitments of $406,000, leaving $94,000 for the SETS fund, the $500,000 authorization. And then also for the economic development account, total expenses including actual encumbrance and committed dollars of $168,000. And a remaining balance of $32,000.
Thank you, John. John, will Bob and Nick give us a breakdown of what they anticipate the dollars are going to be used for, the balance of the funds, SETS funds to be after we approve $500,000?
Yes, sir.
So do you want John and Nick to come up?
Yes.
Okay, Bob and Nick. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, yes.
You changed.
We like to provide...
Nick got a beard now.
Alternative. The resolution for you is very similar to the resolution that you passed in January. You have the red line in your packet that shows the changes, and so if the dollar amount changes, there's more flexibility that's being authorized in terms of the use of funds to include, but not require the use of the appropriated funds as well as the SETS and the enterprise funds. As you heard from John, the account that really is closest to being out of money is the one that's paying for staff. $200,000 as account. The actual expenses are $184,000 on that, and that has to do with all the resources that were allocated during the session. Gene spent almost at least half the session in Juneau for us, and those costs eat against the money you allocated. There's only actuals are only $168,000 out of $500,000, so most of it are in encumbrances and commitments. The increase on that one has mostly to do with the expectation that as we go through the RFP process, and that's why we asked that the presentation occur before this, so you had a sense of where we were going. As we winnow down the proposals from the universe to two to four, and from two to four to one, we expect to hire contractors to do technical evaluations. All along, we've told likely stakeholders, it's your job to prove that you have a solution that will work, and it's our job to evaluate that. There'll be some, I'll give you one, air propane has been discussed a number of times, whether or not an air propane solution would work in an Arctic environment, whether or not an air propane solution mixed with LNG is a viable solution is a technical question we expect to face and hire someone to evaluate what's turned in. And so the majority of the increase in the CETS funds, $1 million from the CETS funds, is expectation that we'll need contractors, and I can't tell you which proposals we need them on or what they'll be doing, but it's to make sure there's money available to make sure that when somebody says, oh, I can do X, Y, and Z, they can do X, Y, and Z, not just X and Y, and haven't gone the whole stretch. And the staff, Kirk and Nick, are predominantly full-time. Gene, with the session off, is part-time, leaning toward conversion, and this should be, the budget recommendation is to get you through to the time chart you saw with the project moving forward.
You need to my thing. So through the end of the year.
Correct.
And what's the balances if we approve this $700,000 to $500,000? What are the remaining balances?
I hate to disagree with the boss. But that really, I don't have the answer to the set balances and how to put that together. It's probably a Michael Lamb question, but I don't want to kick it to him because I don't know if he's prepared for it either. But I can tell you it's a small portion of the $72 million of set funds that I put. And there are also set funds that are non-Senate Bill 23 funds that really have been used for this. The balance on that was $16 million or so.
Yeah. So do you have a sense what it would cost for what I call project overhead?
Yep.
Basically what this is for the project. Is there a number out there that you in the shortest against the wall that we as a board can that you're going to work towards that number when it's all said and done? And I know it's asking to look at crystal ball, things that may pop up, but at the end of the day, you have some sense of an overall budget, what you think, Bob?
Given the expectation has been to get to a single vendor and not budget out based on who is successful and what it's going to take, but really this is all I can tell you at this point. It's going to be in the small percentages because it's, a $300 million project. It's not project management you can commonly expect to see in the 5-10% range on a construction project. Because this is more of a financing project that we're trying to kick off the initiative, if you're in a third of a percent at $1 million, you're going to be in the small percent range.
Five or less.
Oh yeah. If you did 5%, you'd be at $15 million, and I can't envision spending that with the way we've revamped the project to be a financing and facilitating project rather than a management of the project.
Now, you're not ready to consider what we spent to date on the North Slope proposal?
I believe there's assets and value to some of those that if they're not part of North Slope Project, cash will come back to the project. So.
Okay. Any questions from board members?
I have a question.
All right, thank you. My bank was a
questions have been asked. Sharon, do you pull the board resolution G50-0 today?
Aye.
Ms.
Neubart?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. That brings up on our agenda item D and executive session, so I will entertain a motion to go to the executive session.
And Mr. Chairman, I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential and financial information related to the Interior Energy Project, Skagway Ord Terminal.
Thank you. Any objections? We are...